Book 3. Unordnung.
Believe not one word that is written in the Honest Book of Truth by Lord Omar, nor any that be in Principia Discordia by Malaclips the Younger. For all that is there contained are the most pernicious and deceptive truths. Epistle to the Episcopi, the Dishonest Book of Lies, by Mordecai Malignatus, K.N.S.
The Sixth Trip, or Tifereth. The Man Who Murdered God.
To choose order over disorder, or disorder over order, is to accept a trip composed of both the creative and the destructive. But to choose the creative over the destructive is an all-creative trip composed of both order and disorder. The Curse of Greyface and the Introduction of Negativism, Principia Discordia, by Malaclips the Younger, K.S.C.
April 25th began, for John Dillinger, with a quick skimming of the New York Times. He noticed more Fanords than usual.
The fit's about to hit the Shan,
he thought, grimly, turning on the 8 o'clock news, only to catch the story about the Drake Mansion, another bad sign. In Las Vegas, in rooms where the light never changed, none of the gamblers noticed that it was now morning. But Carmel, returning from the desert where he had buried Sherry Brandy, drove out of his way to look over Dr. Charles Mocenigo's home, hoping to see or hear something helpful. He heard only a revolver shot and quickly sped away. Looking back, he saw flames leaping toward the sky. And over the mid-Atlantic, R. Buckminster Fuller glanced at his three watches, noting that it was 2 a.m. on the plane, midnight at his destination, Nairobi, and 6 a.m. back home in Carbondale, Illinois. In Nairobi itself, Nkrumah Fubar, maker of voodoo dolls that caused headaches to the President of the United States, prepared for bed, looking forward to Mr. Fuller's lecture at the university next morning. Mr. Fubar, in his sophisticated, primitive way, like Simon Moon, in his primitive, sophisticated way, saw no conflict between magic and mathematics. In Washington, D.C., the clocks were striking 5 when Ben Volpe's stolen Volkswagen pulled up in front of the home of Senator Edward Coke Bacon, the nation's most distinguished liberal and leading hope of all those young people who hadn't yet joined the Morituri groups.
In quick and out quick,
Ben Volpe said tersely to his companions.
A cowboy.
Senator Bacon turned in his bed. Albert, the teacher stern, fires directly at the Dutchman and mumbled,
Newark.
Beside him, his wife half woke and heard a noise in the garden.
Mama, mama, mama,
the Dutchman mumbles.
Mama.
She hears her son's voice saying as she sinks back toward a dream. The rain of bullets jolts her awake into a sea of blood, and in one flash, she sees her husband dying beside her, her son 20 years ago weeping for a dead turtle, the face of Mendy Weiss and Ben Volpe and 2 others backing out of the room. But in 1936, when Robert Putney Drake returned from Europe to accept a vice presidency in his father's bank in Boston, the police already knew that Albert the teacher really hadn't shot the Dutchman. There were even a few, such as Elliot Ness, who knew the orders had come from Mr. Lucky Luciano and Mr. Alphonse Scarface Capone, residing in the Atlanta penitentiary, and had been transmitted through Federico Maldonado. Nobody outside the syndicate itself, however, could name Jimmy the Shrew, Charlie the Bug, and Mendy Weiss as the actual killers. Nobody except Robert Putney Drake. On April 1, 1936, Federico Maldonado's phone rang, and when he answered it, a cultivated Boston voice said conversationally,
Mother is the best bet. Don't let Satan draw you too fast.
This was followed by an immediate click as the caller hung up. Maldonado thought about it all day, and finally mentioned it to a very close friend that evening.
Some nut calls me up today and gives me part of what the Dutchman told the cops before he died. A funny thing about it, he gives one of the parts that would really sink us all, if anybody in the police or the feds could understand it.
That's the way some nuts are,
pronounced the other mafioso don, an elegant, elderly gentleman resembling one of Frederick II's falcons.
They're tuned in like gypsies. Telepathy, you know. but they get it all scrambled because they're nuts.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
Maldonado agreed. He had a crazy uncle who would sometimes blurt out a brotherhood secret that he couldn't possibly know in the middle of ramblings about priests making it with altar boys and Mussolini hiding on the fire escape and nonsense like that.
They tune in, like the eye, eh?
But the next morning, the phone rang again, and the same voice said with elaborate New England intonation,
"Those dirty rats have tuned in. French-Canadian bean soup."
Maldonado broke into a cold sweat. It was that moment, in fact, when he decided his son, the priest, would say a mass for the Dutchman every Sunday. He thought about it all day.
Boston. The accent was Boston. They had witches up there once. French-Canadian bean soup. Christ, Harvard is just outside Boston, and Hoover's recruiting feds from the Harvard Law School. Were there lawyers who were witches, too? Cowboy, that son of a bitch, I told them, and they found him in the men's crapper. That damn Dutchman. A bullet in his gut, and he lives long enough to blab everything about the Segreto. That goddamn Terici.
Robert Putney Drake dined on Lobster Newberg that evening with a young lady from one of the lesser-known branches of the House of Morgan. Afterward, he took her to see Tobacco Road, and in the cab back to his hotel, they talked seriously about the sufferings of the poor and the power of Henry Hull's performance as Jeter. Then he took her up to his room and fucked her from hell to breakfast. At 10 in the morning, after she had left, he came out of the shower, stark naked, 33 years old, rich, handsome, feeling like a healthy and happy predatory mammal. He looked down at his penis, thought of snakes and mescaline visions back in Zurich, and donned a bathrobe which cost enough to feed one of the starving families in the nearby slums for about 6 months. He lit a fat Cuban cigar and sat down by the phone. A male mammal, predatory, happy. He began to dial, listening to the clicks, the dot, and the dot, and the dot-dot, remembering the perfume his mother had worn leaning over his crib one night 32 years ago, the smell of her breasts, and the time he experimentally tried homosexuality in Boston Common, with the pale faggot kneeling before him in the toilet stall, and the smell of urine and Lysol disinfectant, the scrawl on the door saying Eleanor Roosevelt sucks, and his instant fantasy that it wasn't a faggot genuflecting in church before his hot, hard prick, but the president's wife.
"Yes,"
said the taut, angry voice of Banana Nose Maldonado.
"When I reached the can, the boy came at me,"
Drake drawled, his mild erection becoming warm and rubbery.
"What happened to the other 16?
He hung up quickly.
"The analysis is brilliant,"
Professor Tokus at Harvard had said of his paper on the last words of Dutch Schultz.
"I particularly like the way you've combined both Freud and Adler in finding sexuality and power drives expressed in the same image at certain places. That is quite original."
Drake laughed and said,
"The Marquis de Sade anticipated me by a century and a half, I fear. Power and possession are sexual to some males."
Drake's brilliance had also been noted by Jung's circle in Zurich. Once, when Drake was off taking mescaline with Paul Klee and friends on what they called their journey to the East, Drake had been a topic of long and puzzled conversation in Jung's study.
"We haven't seen his like since Joyce was here,"
one woman psychiatrist commented.
"He is brilliant, yes,"
Jung said sadly.
"But evil. So evil that I despair of comprehending him. I even wonder what old Freud would think. This man doesn't want to murder his father and possess his mother. He wants to murder God and possess the cosmos."
Maldonado got two phone calls the third morning. The first was from Louis Lepke and was crudely vehement.
"What's up, Banana Nose?"
The insult of using the forbidden nickname in personal conversation was deliberate and almost unforgivable. But Maldonado forgave it.
"You spotted my boys following you, hey?"
he asked genially.
"I spotted your soldiers,"
Lepke emphasized the word.
"And that means you wanted me to spot them. What's up? You know if I get hit, you get hit."
"You won't get hit, caro mio,"
Don Federico replied, still cordial.
I had a crazy idea about something I thought might be coming from inside, and you're the only one who would know enough to do it, I thought. I was wrong. I can tell by your voice. If I was right, you wouldn't have called me. A million apologies. Nobody will be following you anymore. Except maybe Tom Dewey's investigators, eh?
Okay,
Lepke said slowly.
Call them off, and I'll forget it. But don't try to scare me again. I do crazy things when I'm scared.
Never again,
Maldonado promised. He sat frowning at the phone after Lepke hung up.
Now I owe him,
he thought.
I'll have to arrange to bump off somebody who's annoying him to show the proper and most courteous apology. But Virgin Mother, if it isn't the butcher, who is it? A real witch?
The phone rang again. Crossing himself and calling on the Virgin silently, Maldonado lifted the receiver.
Let him harness himself to you and then bother you,
Robert Putney Drake quoted pleasantly.
Fun is fun.
He did not hang up.
Listen,
Don Frederico said.
Who is this?
Dutch died 3 times,
Drake said in a sepulchral tone.
When Mendy Weiss shot him, when Vince Coyle's ghost shot him, and when that dumb junkie, the teacher, shot him. But Dellinger never even died once.
Mister, you got a deal,
Maldonado said.
I'm sold. I'll meet you anywhere. In broad daylight, in Central Park, any place you feel safe.
No, you will not meet me just now,
Drake said coolly.
You are going to discuss this with Mr. Lepke and Mr. Capone first. You will also discuss it with...
He read, off a card in his hand, 15 names.
Then, after you have all had time to consider it, you will be hearing from me.
Drake farted, as he always did in the nervous moments when an important deal was being arranged, and hung up quickly.
Now,
he said to himself,
insurance.
A photostat of his second analysis of the last words of Dutch Schultz, the private one, not the public version which he had turned into the Department of Psychology at Harvard, was on the hotel desk before him. He folded it smartly and pinned on top of it a note saying, there are 5 copies in the vaults of 5 different banks. He then inserted it into an envelope, addressed it to Luciano, and strolled out to drop it down the hotel mail chute. Returning to his room, he dialed Louis Lepke, born Louis Buchalter, of the organization later to be named Murder Incorporated by the sensational press. When Lepke answered, Drake recited solemnly, still quoting the Dutchman,
I get a month. They did it. Come on, Illuminati.
Who the hell is this?
Lepke's voice cried as Drake gently cradled the phone. A few moments later, he completed checking out of the hotel and flew home on the noon flight to spend 5 grueling 20-hour days reorganizing and streamlining his father's bank. On the 5th night, he relaxed and took a young lady of the Lodge family to dance to Ted Weems' orchestra and listen to their new young vocalist, Perry Como. Afterwards, he fucked her 13 to a dozen and 7 ways to a Sunday. The next morning, he took out a small book, in which he had systematically listed all the richest families in America, and placed her first name and a check after Lodge, as he had done with Morgan the week before. A Rockefeller would be next. He was on the noon flight to New York and spent the day negotiating with Morgan Trust officials. That night, he saw a bread line on 40th Street and became profoundly agitated. Back in his hotel, he made one of his rare, almost furtive diary entries.
Revolution could occur at any time. If Huey Long hadn't been shot last year, we might have had it already. If Capone had let the Dutchman hit Dewey, the Justice Department would be strong enough now, due to the reaction, to ensure that the state would be secure. If Roosevelt can't maneuver us into the war when it starts, all will be lost, and the war may be 3 or 4 years away yet. If we could bring Dillinger back, the reaction might strengthen Hoover and Justice, but John seems to be with the other side. My plan may be the last chance, and the Illuminati haven't contacted me yet, although they must have tuned in. Weishaupt, what a spawn of muddleheads are trying to carry on your work.
He tore the page out nervously, farted, and crumbled it in the ashtray, where he burned it slowly. Then, still agitated, he dialed Mr. Charles Luciano on the phone and said softly,
I am a pretty good Pretzler, Winifred. Department of Justice. I even got it from the department.
Don't hang up,
Luciano said softly.
We've been waiting to hear from you. Are you still there?
Yes,
Drake said carefully, with tight lips and a tighter sphincter.
Okay,
Mr. Lucky said.
You know about the Illuminati. You know what the Dutchman was trying to say to the police. You even seem to know about the Libertari and Johnny Dillinger. How much do you want?
Everything,
Drake replied.
And you are all going to offer it to me. But not yet. Not tonight.
And he hung up.